Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, I am Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to Impossible Mission. Here on the Geek Show, please click like, please click subscribe. Please check out our Patreon. The link is down below in the description. This week, it's a controversial one. You obviously know what it is because you've clicked on this video. However, what it is, right, is this generation, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, not including Nintendo Switch because they're kind of higgledy-piggledy all over the place and it's nowhere near being over. So, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, are they a good generation?
That's a very, very tough question. I mean, on the surface, a lot of people are going to say, and especially the younger gaming generation, going to automatically say yes.
So let's just say, let's take both sides of the spectrum. Yes and no.
Yeah.
Why is it a good generation if it is a good generation?
Well, I think in terms of graphical capabilities, in terms of hardware capabilities, in terms of software capabilities, it's really upped the game for a lot of things. Games do not look like they used to before. They've become so much more layered, so much more complex. The worlds, the environments, they're creating games. They feel like actual living, breathing worlds. We've talked plenty about Yakuza, but if anyone gets a chance, I would suggest just walking around a bit in one of the environments in Yakuza, one of the city environments, and just getting a feel for how it feels like a lived-in, actual living, breathing city.
Yeah, and the fact that you go there so often, it does. You do feel, the regular haunts, Champion District, and Stardust, and Millennium Tower, and all these places.
Yeah, but on the flip side, you've got the open world aspect of games like The Witcher 3 and Dragon Age Inquisition and Grand Theft Auto 5.
That's not really this generation. It's every generation, Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah. But you've got games like that where they come out and they've created this kind of this whole world with its own lore, its own characters, its own, its own storyline, its own narrative based on that world. And it's something that, games have been kind of leading to for ages. So, on that front, it's this generation has been really good.
Yeah, and there's been some games which have all, redefined and defined what they are and what they can do. Like, we mention this in literally every episode, but I think Marvel's Spider-Man did finally live up to the potential of what a superhero game could be.
Yeah.
I think you could also say that of Batman. However, with Batman, I think it was always drowned out by collectibles and Riddler missions and all this sort of guff crap. Riddler missions, especially.
Oh, I hate the Riddler missions.
Whereas Spider-Man was a little bit more pure, I think.
Yeah.
Also, you have titles like God of War, which, as a dramatic exercise, as much as a video games exercise, I haven't seen anything like that before. The fact that it all takes place in one seamless camera movement. There's no cuts. It's just the camera is constantly behind Kratos in a cutscene that'll move in front of Kratos and sort of zip-zop about.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
But then you've got games where they, over the course of the franchise, they've really developed the characters into actual characters that you just want to play as or with. Uncharted, for example.
Well, most of that was last generation, but
Uncharted 4, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And obviously we know how pretty Uncharted can look, but I think Uncharted 4 was an interesting addition to the series.
Yeah, actually giving it closure.
Yeah. And
the idea of giving a video game closure, I honestly don't believe that was a fit in mainstream console gaming. I don't think that was a thing before this generation of consoles.
Yeah. Then also with this generation, you have games where they basically it's like having multiple different types of game all rolled into one game, like Nier Automata.
Yeah, that was quite bold. That I don't think that game hasn't received the credit it deserved.
Yeah, but I mean, you couldn't get that on previous generations. They didn't have the processing power for that.
Also, right, Nier Automata, one of the best scores in video game, and I don't like scores in video games. So for me to say that,
yeah,
as a proper music nerd, means a lot, I think.
Yeah, it does. Means a hell of a lot.
Yeah, there's also indie games. Indie games have really rose to the forefront.
Yeah.
Multiplayer games as well. Well, they've reached like a pinnacle, really, where I think this is the generation where things could become esports, almost a ridiculous level.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. We saw like an article the other day how there's a world championship for Farming Simulator. The fact that, which is ridiculous even saying it out loud, but the fact that this generation has fostered that sort of industry to grow within video games.
Yeah.
Like it or not, which I don't like that aspect of video games, but it's not always just about me. The fact that that's been fostered is a great thing.
Yeah. I think one of the other things about this generation is it's also the generation where, for the first time, you've had multiple different franchises and multiple different games that have managed to be successfully reinvented, rebooted, reimagined, that sort of thing.
They've finally figured out the remake.
Yeah. Whereas with, you know, with previous consoles, I mean, with the PlayStation 3 especially, you had several attempts at remakes and,
It wasn't remakes, it was HD remasters.
HD remasters and reissues as well.
Yeah. Like the Silent Hill one was just atrocious.
Yeah. And the HD remaster of Shadow of the Colossus on the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. They did a new one, and I've never been a fan of that franchise, that guy. So, as far as I've heard, the Shadow of the Colossus is great, the PS4 one, but not for me.
Yeah, but the PlayStation 3 one isn't worth touching.
Hmm. So, inverse.
Yes.
Xbox One, PS4, has been a bad generation. Why?
Because games no longer take risks.
How do you mean?
Right, I've made the Fallout argument several times, and
yeah, much to the point where you'd think you're almost picking on that franchise.
It's not that I'm picking on. Well, I kind of am. I kind of am picking on that franchise.
You are. And the reason it deserves it, considering what it's become. It deserves it.
The reason why is because Bethesda have, with their, I mean, part of it is to do with the culture of the world today, right? But I think video games as a medium, it's a creative medium. It's an artistic medium. And because it's creative and artistic, video games should be exploring things that maybe people don't want to talk about. Maybe people just want to bury their heads in the sand. The original two Fallout games put you in positions where you wouldn't normally be in normal life, you know? They put you on the darker side of society in a way that Grand Theft Auto doesn't even do, right?
Grand Theft Auto used to have like a sense of danger about it, but I think
it's all very
cashed in for the online game, which just makes them money hand over fist.
But the thing is, Grand Theft Auto is a very safe game, right? And by safe, I mean that even a company like Rockstar will...
Its story isn't safe. I mean, it had like... It's not this generation, but the last one had a torture scene, which was supremely controversial for all the right reasons.
Yeah, supremely controversial. And then you've got the hunting and stuff in Red Dead Redemption. Yeah. I agree. There are aspects of it that are supremely controversial. But compare that to games like the original two Fallout games, where you could literally, you could run drugs, become involved in slavery, run your own bordellos. You could literally become an underworld kingpin by your own volition. You weren't pressed into this. You weren't coerced into this through the story. Nobody forced you to do it. You did it because you wanted to.
Yeah. Okay, we won't get too stuck on that because there's lots of points to bring up.
Yeah, but I mean, games have lost that edge, that cutting edge that they had during the 80s, 90s, and early noughties. They've lost that that sharp focus that brought into detail aspects of human nature, for example. You only see those in indie games now.
The fact that it's the biggest industry on the planet.
Yeah.
Entertainment industry, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, let me ask a question, right? Why is it that I can't, you know, if I want to play as, say, a blind character, right? Why can't I find that in a AAA game? Why don't AAA games take a look at what life would be like for someone who's blind?
Well, we don't want to repeat too many points over the previous episode that we just did, so...
Yeah. I'm just bringing up Beyond Eyes as just, you know, it's there. It's an indie game, though.
Yeah, the big elephant in the room are the business practices. The business practices have been absolutely repugnant.
Yeah.
With EA and Ubisoft basically charging £60, $60 for a game and then throwing it full of microtransactions and targeting vulnerable people. And
all of the advertisements as well that are in-game as well on a game that you've paid 60 quid for.
The corporate practices of AAA... Jim Sterling has... it's hard to say. He's got a line of work that really goes well for him. Triple-apolism or something. Yeah, triple-A capitalism. He's kind of mashed those two things together. Is just repugnant and vile, frankly.
Is it something like...
Catrapolism. I don't know. Let's not get stuck on that, because I'll never get it unless I watch it, and I'm not doing that in the middle of the episode.
I was going to try capitripolipolism.
Yes. Also, another point is there's not been as many classics as you think they are.
Yeah.
When you search best PlayStation 4 games, guarantee you every single time, Last of Us Part 2 is one.
Last of Us Remastered is another.
Well, that's another thing besides the point. God of War.
Yep.
Spider-Man.
Yep.
Bloodborne.
Yep.
Horizon.
Zero Dawn, yep. Do you want to try a few more? Because they're the most obvious games. They are literally the most obvious games that it's like someone put a checkbox next to the games that everybody is supposed to like on this console. Said, yeah, these are the best games on the console, but these are the games that everyone's supposed to like.
The point is, there's just these games have incredible production values, incredible stories, incredible action, incredible gameplay systems, but they're putting all of their eggs into very small baskets.
Yeah.
And which leads me to the next point. All of those baskets are third-person action-adventure baskets.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a point I made on a previous episode. I said something like, I'm all PlayStationed out, and somebody in the comments said, all PlayStationed out, a very likely story, very sarcastically, like, you couldn't possibly be sick of playing the same brand of crafting-heavy, open-world, third-person action-adventure game with an emotional story over and over and over and over and over and over again, that you have to like that sort of thing, which I think is just bogus. All PlayStation, that means you just want to play a different style of game. And when you talk about PlayStation, at the very least, all of their games are just what I described, and it's boring.
Prime example.
Even PlayStation themselves have actually acknowledged this, and they say there need to be more things in this generation.
Yeah, prime example of what you're saying is another game, right? I mean, Ghost of Tsushima is on the list, but another game that everyone claims is one of the best PlayStation 4 games of this generation, right? Death Stranding.
No. Well, I never played it, but it has its defenders.
It has plenty of defenders. All of
them. And when a game needs defenders, that genuinely tells you it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got games like... I've played Death Stranding, and it's dull. It's got great environments, great scenery, you know. It's got some interesting mechanics. But you know what? I found the story very, very slow and very dragging.
It's very divisive, which is fine.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm speaking as like a hardcore sci-fi junkie. And
it's taken risks, and I respect it for that.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's risks and still a third-person action or walking game or whatever.
See, now I've just got in my head, Action Walker, the new hero for our time.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a Robot Chicken sketch, that, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So, it's probably more bad stuff and more good stuff.
Well, there are loads of games that you could rattle off in just about every genre and say, this is a top shelf game, you know, loads of people love it, it's a great game, but you can say that every console, every generation.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, games are getting better.
Yeah.
There's fewer twos and threes and fours out of tens and more sevens. The curve is getting higher. Like, the high quality stuff is more consistent.
Yeah, but I think the defining quality of whether a generation is good or not is just the number of good first party titles that are on that console.
Well, I think a big definer of a good generation is competition.
Yeah.
Let's just go back all the way to the beginnings of the console cycle anyway. The NES and the Master System competed, but it wasn't until the Master System and the SNES that they both forced each other to really think out the box and create good games because they had someone who was ferociously after them.
You mean the Mega Drive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving forward, you have, what, the PlayStation and the N64 and the Dreamcast?
The PlayStation, N64, Dreamcast, yeah.
Who all competed with each other and all forced each other to do well. PlayStation stood out. Then you had PlayStation 2, Xbox. GameCube, and Xbox.
Yep.
PlayStation 2 kind of stood out, but... Yeah, it was a good generation on the account of the variation of the stuff that there was. PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 and Wii.
Yeah.
Super competitive, wide open market. All of them did really, really, really well.
Okay, I've thought of another aspect of this as to why this is...
Oh, just let me finish this point. And they get a PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And Xbox One.
Yeah.
And later on Switch. Switch got... is a bit further in the generation, so I don't think it works quite as well as a proxy. But yeah, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Xbox One, basically did a ritual suicide.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the generation, and it took them the entire run of the generation, basically, to course correct, to fix what they are, to steady the ship, which left PlayStation basically just to do what they want. And yes, there's lots of great PlayStation games. I love lots of them. But at the same time, if we're going to describe this generation as anything, with any one word, it'd be vanilla.
Yeah, my point exactly. One of the reasons why that is the case, right? So you mentioned the PlayStation 2. You had to mention the PlayStation 2. And that brought me back to certain games on the PlayStation 2, I've been racking my brains... trying to think of the PlayStation 4 equivalents of those games, and I can come up with games like Resident Evil, maybe Outlast, you know, games like that, but...
Well, the thing about this generation, just on that point, so many genres were dead this generation, which, again, is not positive.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? The Darkness Within was another one?
About halfway in, the survival horror sort of came back to life, but that first half, it was kind of just, eh.
Yeah, but... there's an aspect of survival horror that...
The Evil Within was the best we got, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, The Evil Within. But there's an aspect of survival horror that I just don't see on the PlayStation 4 now, and that's games like Project Zero, Kuon, Forbidden Siren. Where are they?
Risky Japanese projects and the Japanese industry, again, is another aspect of why this isn't a great generation. The Japanese industry is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
The Japanese industry used to be... video games wouldn't be a thing without Japan. Like, console games wouldn't be a thing without Japan. Nintendo basically say... if you've watched the High Score documentary, as it points out, Nintendo basically saved video gaming.
Yeah.
Because Atari burned the whole bloody industry down.
Well, they saved console gaming.
Yes, I mean.
I'm going to be specific
console
here.
Gaming. It's entirely console gaming, but this is the point that we're talking on here.
Yeah, you know, it's one of my bugbears when people say Nintendo saved video gaming. Like,
yeah, but you can't really say generations when you talk about PC, can you? Because it's kind of meaningless.
You can when you talk about things like the Commodore 64, Commodore Amiga.
But we're not. We're not talking about console gaming.
Because nobody does.
But yeah, Nintendo saved console gaming. So without Japan, I don't think it'd be a thing. Sony, totally a Japanese production.
Yeah.
But now, most video games are American.
Yeah. Very, very westernized gaming. Which is one of the sad fact is, that's one of the reasons why it's so vanilla now. And why everything is so safe. And why modern video games have lost their edge.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Japanese games, Final Fantasy, weird JRPGs, anime fighters, Yakuza, not much else, really. It's kind of a barren wasteland compared to what it used to be.
Final Fantasy Remake, right? Didn't really do anything other than add a convoluted story that was set in an alternate timeline and, you know, spoilers if anyone hasn't played it.
And add a guy who wants to totally sex a bike.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another thing I can credit to Jim Sterling. I've not played it, and that's what he said. So I'm taking it as gospel in this case.
But that's the thing. Even when you get games that are supposed to be like super, super, super Japanese in their approach, they're very, very vanilla. Which is one of the reasons why the new Final Fantasy game trailer, I was, you know, it got me a little bit fluttered.
I was thinking, is this a Dark Souls game? Is Final Fantasy trying to be Dark Souls? And no, it's not. There's another Japanese franchise that there is, Dark Souls, the Soulsborne. But yeah, this looks good. This looks really good. This is what Final Fantasy used to be like.
And that whole idea where the guy, basically, you see him young, but then you see him, then you see his face that he's older, and he just says, "I'll kill you." And that's it. You're like, oh, revenge trip.
You know? But I think, personally, let's just sort of surmise opinions. We've kind of given a good account of what this generation is. And it's, on one end, it's better than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And on the other, for me, it's the worst it's been since the Mega Drive SNES era. Because I genuinely... I mean, there's games that I've liked a great deal, but most of them, I wouldn't write home about any of them. I think they're kind of generic, and the problem is it's that ubiquitous third-person action-adventure thing, which has really soured me on this generation.
Yeah, or the first-person shooter aspect where you run around you know, there's no actual depth to it, there's no substance to it, it's just the majority of the game is run around shooting stuff in first-person.
Yeah. But I don't think it's been a good generation. I'm really sorry to report. I could just as easily, if I was in a better mood, say this has been a great generation. But
yeah, I mean, you're gonna get people who obviously throw out games from like the PlayStation 3 era, like Skyrim and stuff like that, saying, "Oh, you know, that also came out on the PS4." But I'll be honest,
it was a PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 game.
Yeah. And the PlayStation 3, you know, it was. I would actually say the PlayStation 3 was a better generation than this one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was more risk taking, and there was more interesting games, and there was more new franchises being pushed out.
Yeah, in terms of generations, I'd have to say the PlayStation 1 era, that overlapped with the SNES and the NES. I'd say that was the best generation so far.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Just the invention. It was basically just fun games, interesting games, different games from all over the world and all over the map.
After that, I'd say PlayStation 2 era, Xbox, PlayStation 2, GameCube and Wii kind of overlapping, because Nintendo does that weird thing where they don't release consoles at the same time as Sony. Yeah,
they just kind of wing it, so that's fine. But
it's like halfway through the cycle of console releases, they'll release their own console.
Yeah, and please don't give us your angry beef in the comments below, because we know this is a controversial opinion. There's nowhere to do an episode called "Is the PlayStation 4 Xbox One Generation a Good Generation" without annoying some people.
And again, you know, the clue's in the title and the tagline of our show.
Impossible Mission. It's impossible to talk about video games without pissing someone off.
Yeah, but after the PlayStation 2, I'd... See, this is going to be controversial, right? I would say that the NES Master System era of gaming, and by that I'm not just talking about console, I'm talking about just across the board, was actually better than the PlayStation 3 era.
Okay.
In terms of creativity and development.
Well, you have more of like a solid memory. My memories of that era are kind of just haze of youth.
Yeah. But only just, I'd say. I'd say it's a very close call between those two generations. And then PlayStation 4 is kind of bottom of the pile. And I'm not saying PlayStation 4 is a bad generation. It's just, it's not memorable.
It's got memorable moments, memorable bits, memorable parts. But as a whole,
yeah,
not really. Been kind of weak sauce, Rob.
Yeah, it has.
It's being kind of like barbecue sauce and you get at home and it's basically just brown sauce. That's what it is.
It tastes of brown.
And on that bombshell, I think we have to call this a day because I'm getting rude and that's a good time to end an episode.
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
My name is Quentin Flynn. I'm here on The Geek Show. Why? Because I play Raiden in the Metal Gear series. I am Lightning, the Rain Transformed, and I have been transformed by hanging out on this show. So tune in and turn on. You'll love it. The Geek Show. It rocks.
And today, we're talking about a big one. Backwards compatibility.
I'm glad you said it that way. I'm glad we're going with backwards compatibility. When you said big one, I was thinking, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done?
Yeah, it's a big one because it's in the discussion. It's been like right in the discussion for a long time now. So just to throw a pithy title at it for YouTube reasons, let's just say, how important is backwards compatibility?
Yeah, I mean, you know when you buy a new console, right? Is backwards compatibility something that is essential for you? Is it a deal breaker as to whether you buy a console or not? And does the type of backwards compatibility actually matter?
Well, jumping on the PlayStation 1, because they've kind of openly been talking about how the fact that generations do matter, even though they seem to be sort of sketchy on it.
Yeah.
But let's just assume that's the stance that they're going on, and they're not shaking from it. Generations do matter. Yeah. It's not important for that sort of stance, because they want you to commit to this new piece of technology and buy the new things for this new piece of technology. The way they're looking at it is from a completely corporate stance, because they've already got your money. They're not going to get more money with backwards compatibility. They've already got the money that they could have got from that, if that works as a sentence. I'm not sure. So
it does.
So from a purely business angle, backwards compatibility does not matter.
Yeah, but I mean, from a consumer perspective, backwards compatibility, I'd say, is a lot more important from a consumer's perspective, because at the end of the day, let's take Blu-ray and DVD as an example, right? DVD was around for a long time until Blu-ray came around, yeah?
Yeah, Blu-ray players play DVDs.
Yeah, and loads of people had DVD collections and didn't immediately dive into getting a Blu-ray player. Lots of people.
Well, Blu-ray players are kind of like there are very not many people have them. They're kind of like for collectors only.
Yeah, now they are. But when people bought Blu-ray players, they bought them because it was a new upgraded piece of technology. But it'd still play their DVDs. They didn't have to go and replace their entire DVD collection just so they could watch it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I think there's a more important question here. I think it's about keeping hold of things. Because when you talk about movies have had a great deal of problems, because when you go back to pre-70s, pre-60s. They didn't keep all the films. So no. There's all sorts of examples of lost films. There's all sorts of films which are beyond repair, and they're in somebody's basement, that the original master print, and all sort of higgledy-piggledy. And that was sort of pre-movie sort of taking an interest in... It's not restoration. It's posterity. It's making sure you've got all of these things that are here for posterity.
Yeah.
Video games aren't doing that, much like movies aren't, because, you know, there was a big huffah about the fact that Scott Pilgrim was deleted. It's been it's going to be reinstated any time. PT was deleted on the whim of the developers.
Yeah.
So where's the posterity for those games? They're just sort of deleted and then they don't exist anymore. And that's why backwards compatibility matters on that level.
Yeah, it matters on that level. I mean, it's one of the reasons, I have this constant complaint. I bemoan the fact that when people talk about gaming during the 80s and 90s, they only ever talk about console gaming. They forget that there was the Commodore 64, the ZX Spectrum.
This is a hill you're dying, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I will flog that horse until people sit up and take notice that there was an entire section of video games from that era that people blatantly ignore, and even now still gets ignored. And there are some classic games from games side of things.
That, but that horse is going to look like that Jesus guy from Passion of the Christ by the end of it. He's going to be it's going to be a red fleshy thing.
Yeah, but it'll be a holy thing. here's the point, right? Here's my point. There is nowhere now where I can go back and play any games from the ZX Spectrum or the Commodore Amiga or the Commodore 64, short of getting one of those Commodore 64 mini things, or finding the cassettes on eBay, buying a Commodore 64. Or illegal emulation. But the thing is, where do I find those ROMs? There is no actual kind of legal, I use the term loosely, way, or there's no archive of these things. And I would love it if someone like Microsoft or Sony said, you know what, we're going to start releasing old Amiga games as kind of this cultural, this video games archive thing.
Well, they should do that anyway.
Put them on PlayStation Network.
It shouldn't just be in museums. They should do that anyway.
But you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything is so hidebound and kind of cliquey, and it annoys me.
But the thing is, when you sort of turn it on the other mediums, you turn the behaviour of the video game industry on the other mediums, and you realise how bloody stupid video games really are. I mean, just picture it. A book is 7 years old. Okay, deleted that book now, doesn't exist anymore. You have to go really hard to find it, and it's been deleted off all the shop shelves.
Oh, please, I mean, you're using the book analogy. That's been used for other aspects of video game industry stupidity.
Movies are the same, though. Movies. A movie's 7 years old. If that was the case, right, you'd have, like, the first 3 years of the MCU, which people are so fond of, wouldn't exist anymore.
Yeah. I mean,
that's how short memory it is,
Using your book example, I mean, the whole aspect of DLC and stuff like that wouldn't exist. I mean, it doesn't exist in publishing. It doesn't exist in movies. You can't, you know, when you buy a Blu-ray of a movie, you get that movie.
Well,
you don't have to buy extra bits of the movie. Well, you don't have to buy extra bits of the movie as downloadable content, do you?
No, but you have pre-order bonuses where people try to get the first prints. There's that.
Yeah.
But it's a stretched analogy, but yeah, it's the video game behaviour with a lot of things. If they put it on other mediums, it really does amplify the stupidity of video games, really.
Yeah, I have a collection of video games. I collect specific types of video games, horror, RPG, that sort of thing, yeah? And a few action adventures, a few platformers, but I mainly collect video games. I have a lot of them from, you know, going back decades.
Yeah.
And I can only play those games on certain consoles. I mean, the new Mega Drive Mini and the SNES Mini and stuff like that, I can use those, that's not a problem. But if I want to play a Sega Saturn game, I can only play it on a Sega Saturn or on a PC emulator, a Sega Saturn. Same with the Dreamcast games, you know? And that's a constant source of annoyance, because what I'd love is if there was a console where, you know, an up-to-date console, because what we're talking about is the difference between a calculator and a modern mobile phone. And I'm talking a 1980s calculator, and a modern mobile phone, right? Mobile phone has a calculator built in. It doesn't take up much space or anything like that. If you could take a PS1, right?
No, it's just when you said old calculator, the only thing that ever goes through my head is putting in boobies. 8008.
135.
135.
We all know that one. We all did that at school.
We all did it.
But if it would be easy for Sony to put a PS1 emulator into a PlayStation 4 and 5. You know, even a PlayStation 2 emulator.
I'd say it'd be easy, it'd be expensive. Which
I don't think it'd be that expensive.
Would it be expensive given how touted all of this technology they keep on talking about? I think Xbox could do that, and they seem interested in that, but Sony, they seem so very, to go back to that, their bleeding edge technology is a hill that they are dying on.
Yeah. See, this is the thing, this is why I say I don't think it'd be that difficult, because you can already get PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 emulators on the PC, and they've just been coded by people in a bedroom somewhere.
Yeah, but Sony is special, aren't they? The thing is, just going back to the movie comparison, you get movies, like, I review a lot of movies on the side, movies stretching from, like, as far back as, like, 1919.
Earlier than that, you've reviewed some, like, old silent stuff.
Well, that is silent, 1919, really, but, yeah. My point is, those things are reissued.
Yeah.
We get games that are reissued in the sense of the classics. They might have, like, a fresh pot of paint over them. There might be a complete rebuild from the ground. There might be all sorts of things. It might just be a collection of things, like the Mega Drive collections are. But that's a specifically curated thing on somebody's whim. I know there's all sorts of licensing issues, just as it is with movies. Licensing movies is a nightmare, mainly because of music, but that's not the point. The thing is, why can't consoles be reissued? I know that it brings up all sorts of questions, like, how do you get the cartridges? I don't think you need to. For the people who backwards compatibility really matters, they'll continue to collect the stuff. The new stuff doesn't need to be made. All they need is for a console to work. Because the idea of TV technology is another aspect of backwards compatibility that never gets talked about. If you try to you can't get a TV, like, not a modern 4K TV to hook up to a SNES.
Yeah.
It just sort of, the TV would just start laughing. It'd develop a personality and start laughing at the technology. So you've constantly got to have this old banger of a CRT monitor to play these games. I think the answer to backwards compatibility, honestly, is just reissue the consoles, give them a HDMI port, give them a modern power supply.
And an internet connection.
Yeah, and that's all you really need to do.
I'll tell you something, right? Whoever decides to buy up the licenses for the games that were released on, like, the Amiga and the Commodore 64, whichever company decides to do that and basically brings out a piece of kit where you can download Amiga games and Commodore 64 games from the internet onto just this console, it can have a decently sized hard drive. It doesn't need a big hard drive. We're talking about Amiga games and Commodore 64 games. We're talking about megabytes, not gigabytes.
Yeah.
You know? And we're not even talking, like, hundreds of megabytes. And these were all on, like, three and a half inch floppy disks?
Well, 8-inch graphics, what's that?
16-bit graphics?
8-bit graphics and plinky plonk sound effects and music.
Was the Commodore 64 and 16-bit graphics for the Amiga. I mean, if you take a company like, you remember Psygnosis, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, as a publisher, Psygnosis was active, I think, during the 90s mainly. I think it was
the 80s, 90s.
It was mid-80s to late 90s, but during that time, they released a crap load of games. When I say a crap load, just, you know, if you look at the Wikipedia page, there's just this massive list of games that they released as a company. And that was the same for companies like US Gold and Ocean and all sorts of others like that. Gremlin Software was another one. I can't even remember what happened to them. And you have this massive catalogue of games that could be playable on a console. You know? Could be playable.
Yeah. Which is why I think what Microsoft's doing is actually quite good.
Yeah.
I'm not a Microsoft player. I've tried and tried to be one. but it's just square peg, round hole for me. But what I will,
which is fair enough.
What I will acknowledge is the fact that they've continuously kept the internal architecture of their machine consistent, so the Xbox One, or Xbox original run, their gamers will play on the new one.
Yeah.
That shows, like, not just sort of, it keeps people like the retro fans happy. That, I mean, there's that aspect to it. But also, it shows a faith in gaming.
Yeah. But I think also they learned their lesson with the Xbox 360, because the backwards compatibility fiasco from the Xbox 360, I think that really made them sit up straight and take notice as to how important backwards compatibility was to gamers.
No, it's the same with Nintendo, though, just to return to that point. I think having stuff where you've got to pay through the nose over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, look at Nintendo's policy on backwards compatibility. It deletes it and reinstates it and makes you pay for it over and over again. Like this thing with the Mario Legends or whatever this collection's called, where you get Mario 64, Sunshine and Galaxy.
Yeah.
They basically just put it in a... They've done a Windows paint on it.
Yes.
So they've put no effort in it whatsoever. So and the thing is, it doesn't show faith in the history of gaming, because it's kind of like... I've got all these games that I... One side. I've got all these games I loved as a child. I'd love to play again. I like to visit them over and over and over again. But Nintendo's modern policy over here is like, ignore all that boring crap. Look at the shiny stuff. Ooh, shiny, 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 shiny. But I want this old stuff. I love this old stuff. Shut up. Shiny.
Do you know what seriously pisses me off about that Mario collection? Right,
but that is what it is like.
What pisses me off the most about it is, I own all three of those games.
Yeah,
right, and I can't play a single one of them in their original form using the Switch. There's no way for me, who owns those games already, to actually use the Switch to play them on the Switch in any way, shape, or form. Whereas Super Mario Sunshine, I could easily play on the Wii.
His idea.
Yeah,
I think Microsoft have got that sort of tackled.
Yeah,
As far as their footprint in the games industry and how they could like look at backwards compatibility and making all these old games sort of accessible now.
Yeah,
they're doing fine. I don't think they need any compliments. But Sony, first up, I think they're basically wasting PlayStation Now.
Yeah,
I think they're personally, if PlayStation Now was this. Online download, streaming, I don't care which is which. But either of them, service, where I paid, I don't know, a tenner a month, and I had access to the entire PlayStation history.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see, like, 2 million, 3 million people on PlayStation Now. You'd be looking closer to Xbox Games Pass numbers, because the PlayStation history is amazing, and double that probably for Nintendo. Nintendo's gaming history is even better.
Right. Here's something, right? There's loads of Castlevania fans, yeah? Loads of Castlevania fans out there, yeah?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Don't worry, I'm not talking about modern Castlevania, right? How many of them are aware that Castlevania Symphony of the Night, a game that, if you buy it secondhand on eBay, will cost you upwards of 150 quid to buy...
Really?
...on the PlayStation 1. Yes, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, right... will cost you upwards of 150 quid on eBay, right?
That's really bad when the scalpers have got hold of it, isn't it?
Yeah, but, well, that's the thing. It's because the physical copies of the game are very difficult to get hold of. But how many of them are aware that on PlayStation Network, Castlevania Requiem, which is Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood, you can buy for $3.99 right now?
Yeah, it's just... I think with the case of PlayStation, their promotion of what they have, what they could use, their history is atrocious.
Yeah,
they are basically they're basically like a magpie looking for shiny stuff.
Yeah, but this is the annoying thing about what I've just said, and the most annoying thing about what I've just said is that Castlevania is a very old game. I mean, we're talking about a game that came has been out
in the 90s, really?
1993.
Yeah.
It's a it's like a Mega Drive PlayStation 1.
It's before
game.
PlayStation 1. PlayStation 1 was 95, so it's like SNES, Mega Drive.
And this is the thing that annoys me about it. And that is available now, and it works on the PlayStation 4. Right?
The new one does, yeah, not the...
No, I mean, this one, I've downloaded the games, I've started playing them.
Well, the Requiem one, fair enough.
I've downloaded it and it works fine on the PlayStation 4, and if it works fine on the PlayStation 4, then that means it works fine on the PlayStation 5.
In theory, so why not they've made a conscious decision to say no to it.
Yeah, they've made a conscious decision, and I question that decision. I question the logic behind it. If you're putting stuff on the PlayStation Network that's from the PS1 era or the PS2 era, right, and you're then surely you that should be available to play on whichever Sony console you have. If not, then why is it on the PlayStation Network?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the idea that gaming doesn't... Well, gamers respect history.
Yeah.
The gaming industry doesn't.
No. And that, I think, is a crying shame.
Yeah. Because I mean, there's lots of games which, let's be honest, about 3 or 4 years, probably more than that now, 5 or 6 years ago, I went back and played Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. At the time I played it originally, it was one of my favourite games ever. Played it now.
Yeah.
Awful. Does not hold up.
Yeah.
That was with an N64, not like a remastered version that's come post-release. So lots of games, keeping hold of them and playing them doesn't make a great deal of sense as a piece of entertainment, but the history of it, yeah, sure. You can't just ignore your history. You can't just delete history. And the gaming industry seems all too ready to just forget everything and just focus on the now, the literally this moment.
I mean, there's that old adage about it. If you don't know where you're from, then you don't know where you are and you don't know where you're going.
And I feel gaming isn't really learning its lessons. We've did this before recently, how there's a games drought coming.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are prepared for it. And I don't mean a drought is in literally nothing. I mean, there's just going to be very little.
Yeah, it's going to be very sparse. But that's the time when backwards compatibility is the most important. Yeah.
But the gaming industry isn't learning from that. The gaming industry seemingly didn't learn from Atari going under.
Yeah.
The gaming industry just doesn't really learn.
It's because when Atari went under, that was over 40 years ago, and so it could never happen now. We're too big. You know, they said the Titanic was too big. It could never sink.
Honestly, though, people who say that kind of overlook how big Atari were.
Yeah, I know. They basically ruled the gaming industry at that point.
Yeah, they were the gaming industry. They never ruled it. Atari and the gaming industry were synonyms of each other.
Yeah. And so, yeah, with how sparse games are going to become in the next few months, especially with more lockdowns and more restrictions on movement and stuff like that.
There's going to be some big hitters, don't get me wrong, but there's going to be few and far in between.
Yeah, and people are going to want to explore back catalogues of games and then find, if they've got the new next-generation consoles, they're going to find that you can't use those to play those games. You've got to get one of the older consoles to play those games. And the price of the older consoles will go up. And it'll all have a knock-on effect, forcing up the price of things artificially that before might not have cost that much.
The gaming industry's been run by Scrooge McDuck. I'm pretty fairly certain of it. Just in his vault, jumping into pennies. That's not how
that's
not how pennies work. Pennies aren't liquid.
No, they're not. And that would really hurt. And you're basically, it's diving straight onto a metal plate, effectively.
As it turns out, cartoons aren't real life, so on that, I think we have to wrap up for this week.
Yep.
So comment below and join our conversation, and we'd love to hear what you have to add to anything we've talked about today. If you like the video, give us a thumbs, sub or a bell, or all three if you prefer. But that's it from Impossible Mission this week. Join us every Thursday here on A Geek Show for more video game chit-chat. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.